quorum?
I believe we do, yes.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
We have a quorum. I now call to order the February the 14th Happy Valentine's Day. I forgot to wear red. A lot of you forgot to wear red.
I didn't forget.
February 14th, 2008. This is the, we have the agenda before us. Is there objection to the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. We have the minutes of January 10th, 2008. Is there a motion to
approve? Move to approve those presented.
May I make a change, please?
In the agenda?
Second.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were at the minutes.
Okay, we're now in the minutes. It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes as if read. Mr. Benjamin?
I'd like to propose two changes. On the first page of the minutes, bottom the item on the change to the process for selecting the external auditing services. I believe that Ms. Liu requested approval for proposing the external auditing firm, not for selecting. So if we could change the word from selecting to proposing.
Oh, in the heading itself?
No. Well, yeah. No, the process for selecting was okay. But the first line of the text on the right-hand side says process for selecting.
Okay. There being no objection,
for proposing.
That's accepted.
And when I moved approval for a revised resolution to authorize the Inspector General to propose an external auditor.
Without objection, those two are accepted. Further discussion on the minutes? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Now, let me announce that I am, I have to get an airplane so I can leave town. And so I see our distinguished vice chairs here,
yes.
Marcel Solomon. And so he is prepared to take the gavel as soon as I leave, and I have to leave at noon. But in an effort to expedite these very lengthy issues that we have before us, unless there's objection, I would move approval for item B, establish service on Metro Bus Route 79. Item C, establish service on Metro Bus Route NH1. Item D, establish service on Metro Bus Route N22. Well, I'm not finished. Item J, relocation of tracking structures. And item K, reprogramming the funds for the reallocation.
I'm going to object to item K.
Okay, so K, so we have B, C, D,
J.
And J.
Second.
And F, approve reimbursable contract for DC's student smart trip.
Second.
Okay, so just so everybody's clear, B, C, D, F, and J.
On block.
Moved and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. No, the ayes have it. So that leaves us, just so everybody's clear, we have A, E, which I hope we can dispatch rather quickly, G, H, I, and K. Okay, everybody clear?
Yes, sir.
All right, now we go to Metro Matters Borrowing. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, this is a financial presentation on Metro Matters. We will return to the board in March with the status of the many projects that have been completed in the past few years under Metro Matters, which was funded by the local jurisdictions, including rail cars, buses, track replacements, system upgrades. The work that's currently being done this weekend at Metro Center, as well as IT systems. Having said that, though, Metro Matters does not have enough funds to meet all of our urgent capital needs, and I will present a list of those to the board next month. In addition, Metro Matters in itself does not have the full funding for all of the projects listed in Metro Matters, and again, we will update you with the projects that are underway, those have been completed, and those that will not be funded with the existing amounts of dollars in the program. And some of that's due to increased costs of equipment and vehicles.
With that, Rick, if you can, I'm sorry, Chuck.
Thank you. A bit of background on this agenda item on what we did to prep for this. I've met with the CFOs of the contributing jurisdictions. We met with Ms. Beverly Swam Staley, Dr. Gandhi. We held a briefing in Virginia for the Virginia CFOs to brief them on this agenda item and the concept being presented. We've also worked very closely with our financial advisor, and you probably recognize the name of Peter Kesnick. However, Mr. Kesnick, he's with Public Financial Management. He is at a large bond settlement in Maryland today, so we have Joanne Carter, who is here with us today. She's also with Public Financial Management. She's out of the Arlington office, and I want to reassure the board they've been heavily involved in this. One of the main issues to look at as we go forward with the borrow for Metro Matters is whether we're going to do a short-term, continue with short-term commercial paper or convert to long-term borrowing. And some of the issues are, of course, short-term is less expensive, significantly less expensive right now. However, long-term locks us into a known cost in the out years. The original Metro Matters projected a borrow of $611 million, actually anticipated to begin in fiscal 2006. It also allowed an option to borrow additional funds if there were shortfalls in federal funding, and as shown in the chart, we are now projecting a net shortfall of $148 million. So there is the potential under the Metro Matters agreement to have a borrow of $759 million. However, we don't see that as the amount needed at this point. Actually, we see the amount as $222 million less, and that is due to the fact that we didn't start the borrow in 06, so you save significant interest costs. And the reason that we did not do that is because, as with most capital programs, projects don't spend at the rate originally projected. They were lower in the early years of the Metro Matters, although we are catching up with that. We have caught up with that. And we have used internal borrowing and commercial paper to meet our needs so far. So right now, the number would be $537 million as what we would project to be the debt needed. And the way we arrive at that number is if you recap the Metro Matters, you see in the first column the original agreement projected $2.4 billion in revenue and expenditure on projects of $2.7 billion, shortfall of $258 million, and then you would borrow the 611 that I mentioned earlier that could increase, but in this example it's the 611, and you'd have debt service expense of $353 million. Given the current projections, the revenue is down slightly to $2.3 billion. Project expenditures still are on target. It's $2.7 billion. And then the same math, a shortfall of $391 million, but a lesser borrow because we have reduced debt, and hence debt service costs are down. As I mentioned earlier, the short-term interest rates, as recently as 3 to 4 weeks ago, there was a spread between long-term debt and short-term debt of 2 percentage points. Commercial paper was about 2.5%, long-term was 4.5. As recently as the beginning of this week, we issued $20 million in commercial paper at an interest rate of less than 1%. So the recommendation that we're going forward is, and this is concurred with our financial advisor, that we continue to stay with the commercial paper and begin the process, in other words, get ourselves positioned to issue long-term debt as the market would so indicate. The limit on commercial paper today is $330 million. We've got about $300 million borrowed, and we're requesting that be increased to $600 million. So the requested action would be, again, to increase the limit to $600 million and to authorize general manager to execute the appropriate paperwork. One change from the document that was set out, originally we were going to ask the board to give us the authorization to go ahead and begin the actual borrows, but at this point we wouldn't be able to answer the questions, what would the principal amount be of the borrow, what would the term of the borrow be, and what would the interest rates? I mean, we could speculate those, but they would not be precise numbers. So We're not asking for that authority. However, we will proceed. We have a financial advisor in place, as I mentioned. We're in the process of selecting a bond counsel, underwriters, all the necessary elements to begin a long-term borrow. However, we're not going to spend money. We're just going to get all the pieces in place. What that allows us to do is, if the market were to shift, we would be in a position, although it would take 60 to 90 days, we'd be in a position to convert to long-term debt. But before we would do that, we would return to the board. We would tell you the amount we were anticipating as best we could, the projected interest rates, and, of course, the term of the borrow, meaning a 20-year note or a 25-year note.
Mr. Chairman.
Are there people who wish to discuss this? Mr. Zimmerman, anyone else? Anyone else who wishes to?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Monomay, after Mr. Zimmerman.
First, Mr. Chairman, I'll move approval of the revised resolution.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
It's moved by Mr. Zimmerman, seconded by Ms. Hutchins.
So with the revised resolution, I think maybe this puts aside the question I would otherwise have asked, but the question remains to when you shift from short-term to long-term, at what point it's appropriate to lock in, and kind of what triggers that. Is that something that you'll address when you get to the point of that next stage that we're not, where you're now not asking us to authorize you today?
Yes, I certainly can address it to some degree now. Because the interest rate differential is so great, the 1% versus the 4.5%, 1% being commercial and the long-term being 4.5%, you know, it's highly favorable for us to stay where we are, of course. When you issue long-term debt, you have bond issuance costs. Those tend to be 1% of the issuance on average. So as long as we have the spread we have, we should stay financially, from a financial standpoint, of course, stay in the commercial paper. Working with the financial advisor, as we begin to see, and these are unusual market conditions, as we begin to see this turn back to more normal conditions, that's where we'd want to be positioned to begin to go to long-term. I'm not suggesting we'd convert 100%, but yes, I can answer that more precisely.
And I don't need all the details. I just need to know that you're going to have a game plan that says when this number hits this, we do that.
And
you know, whatever proportions it is, whatever makes sense, that you've discussed with a financial advisor, and there's the point at which you know when you're going to take the subsequent actions to protect your position.
And the answer to that is yes, and we will have everything in position to move forward quickly.
Thank you.
Mr. Monomag?
Well, my first question was along the same lines. Essentially, what's the trigger for going forward on the debt? I think the second one is really another trigger question related to the pace of the capital program. So I'm assuming this additional authority is to keep up with what we're doing now.
It is.
And I know we've done some recent review of the capital program, but I want to get a better sense of, okay, what's the reason why we need this additional capacity? What's coming on board? What's happening that's driving the need for drawing down additional debt?
Okay, and there really is, there's no change in the capital program that's dictating this. It's simply that the program always anticipated borrowing, as I mentioned earlier. Originally, it anticipated commercial paper to a lesser degree and long-term debt coming on earlier, as early as 2006. Because of the slow start in the early years, 05, 06, we didn't do long-term debt, and then because of the interest rate differential, we stayed with commercial paper. So there's no new projects or programs. This is simply a shift from long-term staying in commercial paper and a slight reduction in the amount of the borrow because of the reasons I mentioned earlier.
I hear. I guess to both questions I have about what's the trigger, the financial trigger, as well as what's the program trigger. I guess at one scenario, we never ever have to draw down on this capacity. If either the financial conditions aren't right, that it makes sense for us to do it, or the program's just kind of creeping along at the, I say creep, is moving along at the same pace that it's been moving, that we don't need to go and draw down. So I guess that's what the assurance I'm looking for. This is not just essentially a check that we're going to go draw down, we're going to enter into these transactions, but it's going to be based upon some need, and we know what those triggers are. Either program or financial.
And yes, it is. It is based on need. We'll only borrow based on cash flow needs, and we have triggers in place, which are market conditions and the needs of the organization. We could conceivably stay in commercial paper through the end of Metro Matters.
Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No, the ayes have it. Thank you very much. Well, without objection, I would like to, again, it's a matter of accommodation, in my schedule, but I'd like to move the item, since there has been questions raised about it. I'd like to move the item on the southeastern bus road.
Okay.
K, item K, at the bottom of the agenda to the next agenda item. Is there objection to that? Objection here and now. Then Mr. Cato will move now to the item K.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jack, Richard.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. This is on page 119. This is a proposal. We're here to obtain committee and board approval to reprogram $1.39 million from the capital improvement program to an established account that was created at the time that the board authorized the sale of the Southeast Bus Facility. We created two funds, one for the construction of the facility at $60 million once the sale is completed, and the other is for $9.25 million for reallocation costs as the buses are dispersed to other facilities, which was approved by the board. Since that, those processes have not been completed, we had a request from the District of Columbia to reprogram any remaining money from the sale of the first piece of property, the parking lot, that we have been using to do the design work for a proposed facility at DC Village. The design efforts will be complete by the end of March, and we will be ready to go out for bid, assuming that there's the property has been sold and that we have a relocation site. In that fund, there's about $1.39 million left that was going to be transferred over to the construction project, but the district has made a proposal that we use those funds for the initial reallocation of buses, and that the district is committed by the resolution that's included to pay for the reallocation costs until the project of selling the current Southeast Bus Facility and having a relocation site in hand. So the commitment is made by the district to continue that, and at that time then the $9.25 million from the sale would then be allocated to the account and then be used for those costs until the completion of the facility. Right now we're on schedule to go out to bid in April, award a contract in September, and relocate to 114 Bus Garage in June of 2010.
Thank you very much. Is there discussion, Mr. Solomon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just heard you say that the board has approved or will be asked to approve the relocation of each of those buses. But I guess there's 214 buses out of there.
There's 114 buses, and the board has approved the reallocation of those buses to other facilities to be operated on, with the understanding that the expense would come from proceeds from the sale of the Southeast Bus Garage.
Do you have a list of how many buses going to what facilities?
I do not have it with me, but we do have that list, yes.
Could I have that list? I missed that meeting, apparently.
Okay.
I would like
to. We'll get that to you.
How many of those buses of 114 or 214 are going to garages in Prince George's County?
Well, none are going to Landover.
How many are going to garages in Prince George's County?
I think it's about 20 are going to some. Mr. Hughes, can you help me?
I believe Southern Avenue is going up by 20.
Is that the only garage?
Yes, in Prince George's County.
Okay, Prince George. And then how long do you anticipate that those 20 buses will be reallocated or operated out of Southern Avenue Garage?
If we can stay on schedule, we would hope that the garage would be completed by June 2010, and then the 114 buses would be reassigned to the new facility.
So could you provide me with a map or some type of summary of where each of those bus will start their route? When they leave Southern Avenue Garage, how much deadhead time is going to be from that start point to where they start picking up revenue passengers?
Well, I think we have that. I know we have the routes that these buses will be serving, and I think we can get that information.
You can get that to me as well?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, one other question, Mr. Chairman, and that question is, if we're reprogramming this money and the District of Columbia has agreed to refund it or fund it at some future point, why can't the district fund it now as opposed to reprogramming out of this budget?
Well, I could say we could ask the district, but the way the request came in was, were there money still available within the project funds that could be used for the reallocation? And when we took the $6.5 million that came from the sale of the initial piece of property, the parking lot next to the Navy Yard station. There was about $6.5 million. At the point of completing the design, as far as we will go with it, there's about $1.39 million left. And they asked if and proposed that that money be used first, and then they would commit to the continual payment until we have the sale of the facility and the and a new site in hand.
What's the schedule? Do you have an understanding of when that money will be refunded?
The money would not be refunded. The money would be used to a point. It's enough money to run 3 to 4 months of reallocation. If the sale of the property and the new site was in place prior to that, we would stop using that money. We'd use project money. If we use all of that money, then the district would be paying from that point on. And there's not it's not proposed to be refunded. What we have is $60 million for a facility. This would take the potential of 1.39 over and above that $60 million out of the construction project.
Thank you.
Well, one, I wanted to obviously voice the district's support for this initiative. I think not only the district, but the entire authority. I think we've discussed the safety and operational issues associated with operating in front of the new ballpark in Southeast D.C. And I think this initiative ensures that we remove liabilities and potential operational and safety risks in advance of that opening. So I do want to just speak to some of the concerns raised by Mr. Solomon. The commitment has been made by the district to ensure and support the WMATA's efforts to make sure we remove those liabilities. The plan is that over the during the construction of the new facility, of the $69 million from the total sale, essentially we're looking to use the $9.25 million that was set aside to defray any additional deadhead costs and then refund back to the project any excess to ensure we have the full and complete budget to complete the project as designed by Metro. So as I see it, this is essentially it's a zero-sum game. We've covered the costs that we anticipated to incur. We're still able to deliver the project, but I think more and most importantly, we've eliminated a major risk for the authority by not operating there when we have people walking around a very dense and crowded area. So I think in many ways it's a win-win for of all parties involved here. Those are my comments.
Mr. Benjamin?
I agree entirely with what you just said, Mr. Monomea, but unfortunately it isn't the same thing that Mr. Rickler said, and it isn't the same thing that the resolution says. So if we could get the resolution to match what you said, that would be very good. If I understand what you're saying is we're going to transfer $1.4 million from the construction portion, from the $60 million of construction that we said we were going to do, and we're going to use it temporarily to cover the operations, the extra deadhead. And when the $9.25 million becomes available, that'll be refunded. Is that right?
It could be, but I guess one of the things we didn't want to do is limit ourselves to the specific funding source for those dollars. I mean, the option is still available to use other resources the district has available, whether within the WMATA budget or from the district's budget.
The concern I have at this point is there was a great deal of difficulty coming up with the $60 million and saying that that would be enough to, in fact, do the construction. I understand that acquisition of land may end up being more expensive than we thought, and so what we would be doing if we approve this at this point with this financing mechanism is further reducing the amount of money available for land acquisition and construction, which is not what I thought I heard you say. I think I heard Mr.
Well,
say.
Let me try to clarify. When the sale of the garage was proposed to the board, we believed that the $60 million, based on engineering estimates, was a sufficient amount of funds to provide for a basic replacement facility, and that the $9.25 million is sufficient funds to provide for the reallocation and at that time the lease back of the facility to get us through the construction project, or the demolition project, and then the reconstruction project. We need to keep the 9.25 in place so that when we do have a project and we do have land and we do have a sale, that's the 9.25 will be needed to provide this reallocation, which is what the board approved initially. And that's why I'm saying is that the 1.39 is money that is in the current design component of the facility that, from a staff standpoint, would be transferred over to construction, but it's, you know, about 2% or less of the total amount of money that would be available. And I think from a staff standpoint, and I think from the board standpoint, we agree that not being at the facility and being out of there, that that is probably a good use of that 1.39 to get us moved out before, with the district's commitment of continuing that payment until we actually have a total project in place.
But what you're telling me now is you want to increase that 9.25 by an additional 1.39, and that that's not going to impact your ability to build the final garage.
I do not believe it's going to impact our ability to build the final garage, and it's not adding 1.39 to the 9.25. It's using 1.39 until the 9.25 becomes available.
And then?
And then the 9.25 would be used. But if we don't sell the property, if the 1.39 runs out of...
Let me stop you. You're in point number two.
Okay.
Let me get to point number... When the 9.25 becomes available,
yes.
Do you refund the 1.39?
Yes, no.
No. So it's not 9.25 plus 1.39 that we will spend on interim operations.
Well, let me be clear. We would use the 1.39 until the time the 9.25 becomes available. If we use all of that funding, then the district will fund the reallocation until the 9.25 becomes available.
That's not my question. Let me try it again.
Okay.
I got the question. I understand the question.
I'm sorry.
If we were use the 1.39 until we're able to sell the facility and locate a facility or land to to build a new replacement facility, it's going to take us approximately the same amount of time. So we would probably spend the $9 million in deadhead costs during that period of time. So the total amount spent for deadhead would be closer to $11 million.
So we are adding those two, which means that the money available for the rail, for the actual construction of the, and land acquisition goes down by $1.39 million.
No, no, the 60 stays intact because this 1.3 is coming from the original seed money, which is different than the 60.
And you're saying you don't need that.
We start.
Right. There was originally $6 million that was created by the sale of the employee parking lot, and that bucket of $6 million was for the original engineering and design and planning phase. And what I think we're hearing now is that not all of that original $6 million is needed.
And I guess that's the assurance I want to get is that you are telling us that this is money that you don't need for its original intended purpose, and therefore you're more than willing to release it for this, and you'll still be able to build a garage.
That's right.
Cato?
excuse me. Based upon estimates at $60 million, the longer we wait, the more expensive this facility will be. There's no question about that. I cannot respond that it might not go up more, but... Right now, $60 million is the budget that we have to build the facility.
But you're saying you don't need the 1.39 at this point,
based
given your original version of the world.
Given the original version of the world, that is
so
true.
So it can be used for something else without adversely impacting the original intent.
Yes.
And therefore, we will not refund it. It will just be 9.25 plus 1.39 or 11 million.
Under the existing action.
In the current action. That's okay. And we'll still be okay except for unknown things like increased cost of land and increased cost of the garage. And in the interim period, should you use up the 1.39 and you don't have the 9.25, the district is committing to paying 100% of those costs. Is that right? That's what I thought I read here.
Yes.
Is that a yes nod from the district?
Rephrase that one more time for me. I'll make a commitment of $1 million. I mean, our commitment is to cover the cost of operating in the based upon the dispersal strategy until we have a new facility. Our intention is to work with WMATA or work with everybody here to get a new facility up and operational as soon as possible. I want to add another piece of it because I think there's some savings associated with that 9.2 that we will see once we've actually entered into the sale of the property at Southeast, reduction in cost for the lease of the lot. We should see approximately, $1 million.
Well, that we've included that
in the
funds that the district has committed to the current operation is already included
it's
in the calculation.
In
so the 9.25 is really needed from the time we have a project.
Okay, yeah, that commitment is there.
So, let me ask a question. If I may, Mr. Brown.
Certainly.
You're not suggesting that this is a blank check.
No, absolutely not.
Whatever amount is needed for however long that the District of Columbia is going to support this.
That's the way this reads.
Are you suggesting that?
No, what I'm suggesting is that we're going to pay the cost until we move forward on the construction of the project. We are going to sell the existing land where the Southeast Bus Garage operates. It's going to be vacated, and we're in the final stages of finalizing that agreement.
But there is no upper limit on the amount that the district is committing to if there's a long delay in obtaining the land and selling the garage.
Because you do want to take into account all manner of things that could happen. There's many a slip betwixt the cup and the lip, and there's many. There could be litigation. There could be, you know, we could be looking at each other. Who knows? And I think that you would want to say, wouldn't you, that at some point, if something really unanticipated such along those lines occurred, that we would want to reconsider, you know, the change that we are now encouraging.
Well, it seems to me that if we don't have a commitment and we don't know what we're dealing with, we shouldn't be voting.
Well, there is, if I may just step out of the chair for a moment here. There are compelling issues which we have previously discussed at length, which you only referred to in your statement, Mr. Monahan, concerning pedestrian safety at this location. And there's every reason to believe that this deal is going to go forward and that this is not going to involve any additional payment by the district. But I'm just interjecting a word of caution that if there was to be a prolonged litigation, you know, we'd want to revisit this question before we continued on and on and on.
Well, I think it would be.
There'd be other options.
I mean, I think it would be eminently reasonable that if something unforeseen happened, that we would want to work together to make sure that it was dealt with. I mean, I think everybody around the table believes and wants to believe that the deal is going to go forward. And that if something unexpected were to happen, I think it would be, again, very reasonable for us to think that we could come to some solutions that's workable.
And with that caution, we're willing to make a very substantial percentage.
Okay, so I just want to know what it is that we are all voting on. If I understand correctly, we're voting to increase the amount of money that is going to be used for operating by $1.39 million, or less if it isn't needed, that should the sale of the garage not occur to release the $9.25 million, the district at this point is in fact committing to pay the difference, and that's what the resolution says. And by the way, I'd like the record to show all of this. And, you know, and that is the deal that we're talking about, and we're hearing from staff that this will not adversely affect the ability to build the garage and acquire the property because this $1.39 million was intended for a purpose that now is no longer needed. And that's the pieces that I think I've heard. I'd like to make sure that that's what we're saying, because if not, I intend to vote no.
Well, I think that is a correct statement. This board always has the opportunity to revisit decisions that it has made.
Certainly.
But for today.
And under extraordinary circumstances that nobody could now foresee, that might occur. And that was the only caution that was being expressed.
I don't disagree with that. We always have a chance to revisit anything we do. I just want to make sure we understand what we're doing. And I sure didn't understand it when this was first put in front of us.
Well, you're always very helpful, Mr. But I think everybody is clear, are they not? Then is there further discussion? Further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it, and the motion, the reprogramming is approved at the committee level. Now we will proceed to item E, as our distinguished Inspector General, no, there she is. We're at item number two. having disposed of items A, B, C, D, and K.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, please do present to the board fiscal year 2007 external audit deliverables. We have a contract, and the contract, this is its last year, and we'll be going about selecting a new external auditing firm. The contractor we have is KPMG, along with F.S. Taylor. Unfortunately, both of the partners got hit by the flu season, so I have with me Irfan Satra Adi. He's an audit manager with KPMG, and he will present the results of the financial statement audit.
Thank you. The agenda today, we will go over the audit, our audit approach for the FY7 audit, the audit results, single audit results, and also required communications. Our audit approach is basically an integrated team, KPMG and FS Taylor, and also for audit, we involve other specialists, which include IT specialists, actuaries, financial instrument specialists, and also tax specialists. The audit is performed with a risk-based approach. With other audits, we don't do 100% testing of transactions. We select samples based on risk areas. During the process of the audit, we perform communication with management frequent and weekly at the time of the audit, and also informal communication with other management. The results of our FY07 audit, on the financial statement, our opinion is an unqualified opinion, which basically is the best opinion that we give on financial statements, and means that the financial statements are fairly stated. In addition to the opinion on the financial statements, we also issue a report over internal controls. Now, in the report over internal controls, we did note one significant deficiency, which relates to construction in progress. And the item we noted is that costs for completed constructions were not timely moved into fixed asset. Other than the internal control report, we also issue a letter to management on certain items that we recommend for improvements. We have six items for improvements, which are listed here. The first one is mortality table should be updated, reconciliation of construction in progress, controls over capitalizing interest, controls over review of timesheets, documentation controls over IT program changes, which is a repeat finding, controls over automated payment system, also repeat finding. In addition to the financial reporting recommendation, we also noted eight IT general control comments, of which three were repeat comments. In FY07, we did also perform agreed upon procedures. We did two. The first one is related to the National Transportation Database, which we note one finding related to motor bus surveys that was not performed for one quarter due to a system conversion. In addition to that, we perform agreed upon procedure over capital funding schedule, which we note one finding of a $35 million difference between the schedule and the general ledger. Just for perspective, $35 million is over a $15 billion balance. Management concurred with all our audit comments. During our audit, we noted one audit difference that was adjusted. It's a $215 million reclassification from construction in progress to fixed assets, which relates to our significant deficiency, and also a $22 million of depreciation expenses that was related to it. In addition to that, we noted six unrecorded audit adjustments in FY07, which these are not recorded because management believe and the auditors agree that these are not material. And as listed there, all of the impact is pretty much around 1% of total expense, assets, and liability. For the single audit, we reported on compliance with major requirement of each major program. And in FY07, we looked at four major programs. The DOT Federal Transit Cluster, Homeland Security Rail and Transit Security Grant Program, the Homeland Security Grant Cluster, and the last one is Homeland Security Urban Area Security Cluster. For the single audit, we noted four findings. The first one relates to security improvement at the bus facilities. This is a finding that we also communicated last year, and it's a repeat finding. In addition to that, we noted purchases of 30-foot buses instead of 40-foot buses required by the grant, and also a purchase of a vehicle lift that is not allowed by grant, total cost of $829,000. The third finding we noted is a duplicate charge to the grant for public safety radio system in the amount of $23,000. And our last finding is an $89,000 for the purchase of a security system that was expanded after the period of the grant expired. Management concurs with the single audit findings. We are also required to communicate certain matters. Most of the matters I've previously communicated. In addition to that, we are required to communicate additional matters. The financial statements are the responsibility of management. And our audit was designed in accordance with the auditing standards, which provides reasonable rather than absolute assurance that the financial statements are free of material misstatements. WMATA's accounting policies and methods are appropriate and in accordance with industry standards, and there are no significant changes from prior years in terms of significant accounting policies. In the process of developing the financial statement, WMATA does use estimates and judgment. This relates to deferred revenues, pension benefit assumptions, liability for injuries, and damage claims. We concluded that management estimates are reasonable and estimates that impact the financial statements. Significant audit adjustments, we've gone through that on a previous slide. There's one audit adjustment that was made and six unrecorded adjustments that are being. We did not have any disagreement with management, and we are not aware of any situations which management consulted with other accountants related to financial reporting and accounting matters. During our retention, we discussed the application of accounting principle and auditing standards. However, our responses were not conditioned to our retention, which basically means we did not perform any opinion shopping in terms of our retention process. We did not encounter any difficulties during our audit. We also provided written communication to management, which include the engagement letter, management representation letter, and the management letter. And lastly, we want to confirm that we are independent accountants with respect to WMATA.
Any questions? Mr. Zimmer?
A question for Ms. Liu. If I understand all this, there are basically three things we need to know about this. Tell me if I got them right or wrong. Number one, overall, the audit resulted in what you both call an unqualified opinion, which in your industry is the equivalent of getting an A.
That's right.
Okay,
it's
so
called,
that's the first
it's
thing.
It's referred to as a clean opinion.
All right, so that's number one. Number two, there was one thing that is identified as a significant deficiency, this thing that involves $215 million, which sounds scary. But basically you're saying it's essentially an accounting presentation issue. There wasn't actually any money lost or anything like that. They had to clean up the way they wrote it up, basically.
That's correct.
And that's been taken care of.
They're working on that.
They
have a corrective action plan to take care of that.
And you'll let us know if there's any problem otherwise.
Yes.
It should be okay. And the third thing was this single audit item in which essentially the federal government is telling us they still have a problem with something they've still had a problem with the last 2 years.
Yes, the bus security issue.
And this is something that the general manager has to take care of.
They have my understanding they are working on a corrective action plan on that.
Okay, so we will hear more. Let me ask Mr. Cato. Are you hopeful that when they do this again 12 months from now that we won't see the same comment the same way?
I am hopeful of this.
Okay, that's probably as good as you can do right now. And in general, you don't contest anything that we've heard?
No, I do not contest.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move approval, or that the committee recommend approval of the resolution.
Second.
It's been moved and properly second. Any discussion?
I'd like to add. I want to thank Mr. Zimmerman for covering some of my items, but I think I'd be a little concerned over on page 5. They talk about some repeat issues, and maybe minor issues, but it looks like several of them are in the IT area. And so I would certainly ask Ms. Liu to keep an eye on those, particularly, and maybe give us some sub-reports as the year goes on. Thank you.
Any other questions, discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Ayes have it. Motion passed. Next item, item G, changes to personnel policy and procedure manager.
Andrew Burnside, who is the assistant general manager for workforce services. Mr.
Chairman? Yes.
Could I ask, given that the hour and the fact that we have a couple of very substantive, difficult items to do yet, I wonder if perhaps the general manager can tell us just what this is about and succinctly, and maybe this isn't a complicated matter.
It is very uncomplicated. It's just to give me the authority to adjust salary ranges if the market demands that they be adjusted based upon what we observed in the region and all the three jurisdictions. It does not guarantee pay increases. However, the adjustments that we would make on all of the ranges will impact approximately 50 people. Who will be below the range of the 10,000 employees that we have.
What is the procedure now? What don't you?
The procedure now is before we can make any of those adjustments, we have to bring that back to the board with detailed discussions and go through the board process to do it. This process will allow me to do it. However, it must be clarified in the budget process what action is taken, and it must be within the budget.
Ms. Hedges.
The last part was my question, but I follow up on that. Once you are granted this and you have the opportunity and it's noted in the budget, does it come back to us as an informational piece as to what kind of adjustments have been made?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Yes.
Any further?
And I guess one other part that I wanted to make sure we were all saying publicly. This is to give you the flexibility in a more timely way, or is it something different?
It's exactly what you said.
I'd also like to add that there are some other more administrative policies, approximately 16 out of the 39 total policies that you would be delegating to the general manager to make changes to, anything from tuition reimbursement to relocation expenses and so on.
Is there a motion on this item, or do you want to defer to the
I'll move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and properly second. Any further discussion? All those in favor? Vote aye.
Aye.
Those against? No. The ayes have it. Item is approved. Next item.
On that last item before we go forward, it is, of course, going forward to the board meeting in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask if this was discussed at the JCC, but I would ask that you make sure it's vetted with jurisdictional staff.
Yes.
Prior to the board meeting.
I also would just comment that I think what you heard was a certain amount of concern on the part of the board. We don't want to tell you how you should pay yourself, but the overall compensation that people get and the changes in the overall compensation is something that we do care about, because we have to sort of balance that against what's happening in each one of our own jurisdictions. So that's an issue that we do still want to pay attention to.
And that is controlled through the budget process, and cannot increase salaries without approval of the board.
Okay, moving along. Item H, Verizon. Fiber optic lease. Agreement with Peck. Who's going to do this? Good morning, still, Ms. Peck.
You're making this very short. What this asks for is the authority for the general manager to make a very good deal that results in excellent revenues for Metro. If you just I'll pass this laminate around to you, if I may. Verizon for 20 years has leased from us a cable run. That contract ended at the end of January. We are making a new contract. We are making the new contract at very favorable prices. I will pass around. I have numbered these because I would like them returned. I'll pass 9. I can have them returned. You can see the favorableness of this contract, the specifics, and I will take you through, but I will not say numbers. You will read the numbers as I say. But you can see this is a 10-year contract, 5 years, 3.5 years are non-optional, and then in the first 5 years, 1.5 optional, and then a 5-year optional period beyond the first 5 years. If you look down at the bottom of the page, you can see in the annual dollars currently, you can see the number that we're getting annually for this fiber run. Fiber run is exactly the same as it was in the past 20 years. You can see in the new contract what we would get, a number very substantially higher. If you look at
what's
the five...
What's that number? You say this is at 26 million?
I really don't want to say the numbers, if you may. Let's start again. You look at annual dollars currently, just look at the annual dollars currently, that number. If you look at the number right below it, you will see how much we're going to get in the new contract for 1 year. And then you can see at the end of 5 years, for the second 5 years, there will be another increment, annual increment. If you then go to 5 years, you can see that under our current contract, what we would get under the new contract, which is the number you are mentioning, what we would get in the second 5 years. And if it runs 10 years, at the lower right-hand corner, what we would get. That number is very substantially more than we got for 10 years under the most recent contract. So we're simply asking this morning for your approval for a ratification for the temporary license that we have in place now, the temporary contract, and we have received the first check on that interim contract, and then that contract would go to its final contract on the 1st of March, and at the 1st of March you would grant the general manager the authority to sign that contract. Since it is for more, substantially more, than we are doing now, and it is revenue to us. We are the vendor to Verizon in this case. And this contract has nothing to do with the cellular services that will be competed later on this year. This is simply, we are a vendor to Verizon. You want to sign a new contract with them that we have just negotiated.
Okay, let me just say this before I ask a question. Maybe the chairman of this committee agreed to have this open discussion about this. I think we could have had this discussion with the numbers in executive session, brought it back out in open session and accept your recommendation for the future, and maybe we could talk to the chairman about that, because these numbers are sensitive, and without any forewarning, I made a slip. So I think in the future, these type of discussions, given the confidential nature, should be discussed in executive session and then brought back in public session.
Well, I do want to move the item, but I do also have a question.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there a motion and a second?
I guess the question follows the same thing we're talking about, and that is, first of all, why is the financial information so confidential at this stage? And two, why can't the board members see it before the board meeting?
We are negotiating the final T's and C's for the final contract, and that is the reason that I believe it is sensitive. I want to make sure it's in the bank before it is visual, and do whatever you want as to how you would like to see
this. This is a broader question, and it relates, I think, to some of the concerns that Mr. Zimmerman has about what belongs in executive session and what doesn't. And it may be that this belongs in executive session, but I guess I wonder, when we get confidential memos on financial issues, first of all, I'd like to see them earlier, not later.
Yep.
But second of all, why? How often do we really need to make it a confidential item with, don't say the number, it's the third one down? And to what degree can we just let everybody know? And I think we need to explore that, not at this moment, but it needs to be explored.
Any further discussion?
Yeah.
Mr. Zimmerman?
First, can you tell me why this wasn't a competitively bid contract?
Excuse me, there's a question.
So why was this that competitive?
Yeah.
This would have been Verizon having to have held a competition for their supply. This cable run is cable in our tunnels, owned by us. Right-of-way is ours. Cable is ours. Fiber is ours. We are the vendor in this case.
Let me state it differently now. We have an asset somebody wants to use. They're going to pay us to use it. That's what you're telling me. Is it a competitive opportunity for anybody to use it who wants to?
We have 13... of these types of contracts. This is one of the types of contracts. It's one of the contracts. Their cable run is where they would like to be. The contracts with the other parties are where they would like to be in our tunnels.
Is there anything exclusive about this? If I'm a competitor and I say I want to come in, does this deal prevent anybody else from doing anything?
No.
Okay, so
in fact, we would love to have more customers using this fiber. These fiber bundles are very substantial, and we can take.
We're selling, not buying, and we'll sell to anybody who wants to come in.
That's it.
You're saying you have a bunch of dark fibers that we can still make.
That's what we've got. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. Secondly, you said that this has nothing to do with the cell phone issue.
That's correct.
So this is not the infrastructure that's used to carry Verizon Wireless's.
That's
signal.
Correct.
So it literally has nothing to do with
has nothing to do with the cellular activities.
And so, because our issue there is that they, what happens to be this company, has built an infrastructure which they can use for wireless, which anybody else could use if they could make a deal with them. So the issue is, what are we going to do to make sure they in fact make those deals, as opposed to perhaps not finding it in their interest to make such deals?
The network that we have now, our cellular network now, was built for us by Verizon. It's paid for by Verizon. It is Verizon's cellular network. The technology that they have on that network makes it such that only they and Sprint, by roaming, can use that network. AT&T, T-Mobile have a different technology and cannot use the current Verizon network. Verizon would love for them to be on, but their technology is now obsoleting. It is a technology first used during World War II. And when we go out for RFP in April on the new network, on which will be fully competed as to who the builder is and will be structurally required to take all of the cellular providers and have technologies that all of the cellular providers can use, we expect potentially that Verizon will come onto that new network, even though they already have a network.
When am I going to see that?
April.
And it'll take time to implement it?
Yes.
A year or two?
It will take between, I'm going to say between, for parts, between 18 months and 4 years. Congress is very eager for certain minimum implementations to occur, and so they would be the highest priority, and we would do those first, and then the entire system.
But it's going to be up to another 4 or 5 years before people can use their cell phones.
No. They can end it. We will do the highest priority stations first, so we would probably take a band of 20 of the highest priority stations and implement there first and then roll out the rest of the implementation within a four-year period.
And I'm not going to hear anything when that comes about in April, which is going to lead me to say I wish I'd known that when I approved this then.
Sorry?
When you bring that to us in April, there's nothing that's going to make me wish that I'd known it before we did this. You'll still be confident saying this action has nothing to do with that action.
Nada. You said.
Thank you.
Any further discussion?
Is there any relationship between this this infrastructure and the Metro Channel that we discussed this morning?
Yeah. But between the neutral host RFP in April and MetroNet, MetroNet provides all the wireline transport, and the neutral host is the hub for all the wireless transport. They are connected.
Oh, we're going to come back to those memos.
Yes, thanks, Jim.
Any further discussion? Further discussion? Any motion?
Did we make a motion?
Yes,
we
did. There's a motion, properly second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say no. The ayes have it. Motion approved. Next slide. Item I, Mr. Kidd. Information technology reallocation program request.
Don't want to lose the same purpose. Actually, what we're asking is that got that presentation.
What we are asking for in this is to reallocate $5.1 million, a total of $16.9 million, which is in hand. If $16.9 million allocated to the telephone system, and I am asking that $5.1 million of that, because of our terrific need to remediate our administrative systems, be redeployed to the remediation of those administrative systems, and that we delay purchase of $5.1 million worth of telephone handsets so that what we will get to those administrative remediations, so that what we will have is I will put into place for about $11 million, I will put into place the backbone network, not only for the phone system, but for every other wireline need we have to transport data. But for the phone system, I will not buy the phones that will travel on that backbone, but I will use that $5.1 million now to remediate some very, very urgent administrative systems remediations that we have in HR, payroll, and procurement. So in 2006, so if that's enough, we don't need to do this, but I can do this if you'd like.
Move approval.
Any further discussion?
Sure. First, has this been thoroughly discussed with the JCC?
No.
What is the urgency of moving this at this time?
Is that there really are, that we are midway into remediation of our administrative systems, and there is no funding to continue that remediation. I have a very, very fine remediation team here. I would like them to go forward, and the only near-term source of funds available for that remediation team, the exact right remediation team to continue, is to delay the purchase of the handsets whose money is in hand and to use it for the remediation.
Mr. Chairman, this is a highly technical area in which it's very hard for me to judge what I'm hearing. Most of these items like this, you know, it all sounds great. So, you know, it all sounds great and all costs millions of dollars and, you know, it's going to have great outcomes. But it is the kind of thing that, you know, I want more outside check on. I want to hear from somebody who knows something about this subject matter to have a better sense of whether what I'm hearing makes sense. I mean, I've voted on a lot of these kinds of things over the years here and in my county. I remember before Y2K, voted on all kinds of things, that ungodly sums of money, which I have no idea to this day if they were well spent or not. And I'm not sure anybody does. And I've done things where afterwards they said, gee, that was a mistake, because the next team comes in and, you know, this is the way we ought to do it, and they do things completely differently. So I'm not comfortable voting on this, frankly, when the people who, at least in our jurisdictions, deal with this haven't had the chance to look at it and give us the second opinion that I feel I'm going to need before I vote to approve this. So I'm personally not ready to cast a vote for what we're being asked to do today.
Mr. Benjamin?
I'm painfully aware of the problems with PeopleSoft and from my own experience and understand the need for remediation. So I'm very supportive of that. I do have something of a concern, however, when we take the money out of handsets and you're going to come back to us very shortly and say, I've built this wonderful network, but nobody can use it because they don't have the handsets. I'm wondering where that money is going to come from. So I'm not quite sure that we aren't just moving the problem forward somewhere, and where is it being moved to?
Well, there's 2 points. First, if I could respond to Mrs. Zimmerman, and we could take the same action as we took in a prior approval this morning and meet with the JCC before the board meeting itself, you know, tentative approvals, with the instruction that we meet with them, get their concurrence on this. The second issue, this is one of those where we have to look at priorities. There's X amount of dollars, and what's the most critical need for the agency? And in my discussions, not only with IT, but also with the financial staff and other administrative staff, the critical need is to fix the systems that were put in that were not installed correctly or fully. That's on right now. We have to do that. If not, our financial systems are in jeopardy, and I can't allow that to happen. And you're right. We are taking money from one side to put it on the other side, and it leaves a shortage on one side. And we're going to have to get creative how we backfill that. But when I look at the criticalness of programs, the expenditures for the administrative remediation is the most critical.
So I don't disagree with that.
If I can just say a couple of points. The remediations which we have already done on these systems, and they are critical. When I came to Metro, the number one angst among all of my colleagues was these administrative systems and the fact that they were not where they needed to be. And so by saving money from internal projects that were already associated with that, I got the first $2 million of the remediation, and that was preventing things we needn't have done and using that money to begin the remediation. The $16.9 million was originally intended only to give us the next generation of telephone system. Out of that money, we are building a backbone not only for the telephone system, we are building a backbone, MetroNet, for the transportation of all voice and data of every kind in Metro. So we've already leveraged that money greatly. But so I will have the backbone not only for the telephone system, I will have the backbone for every kind of data that Metro needs, all the rail data, all the paratransit data, all the bus data, all the administrative data. I've already leveraged that money. I just want to, and today I can't tell you where that, if when we rob Peter to pay Paul, where that $5.1 million for the handsets is going to come from. But it's contracts like the one I just showed you 5 minutes previously and doing much better on things than we had done historically. Booking in and finding money where it doesn't make sense for us to find money that is already laid up. Those are the kinds of things we're doing every day. But in the meantime, I've got to rob Peter to pay Paul to finish this remediation. If we don't finish what we have started, we won't get the value of having begun it. And it is, as I say, the number one angst point across all of our colleagues in terms of their day-to-day work.
Okay, Ms. Hutchins and Ms. Hewitt and Mr. Giannico.
I think Ms. Peck has addressed part of it, but I would like to go back to something that you presented to the board and time frame has left me. But you talked about the overall architecture of where you needed to go. And I guess it would be helpful to know where this fits in, because I think we bought into the presentation that was there, and we understood that there would be investments needed to move us from an architecture that was outdated
Yes.
And where does this fit in that, and where does it go from now into the future, so that we have a sense that we're following a path that you presented to us, rather than all of a sudden there's a problem that we're correcting.
Absolutely. And when I, the board had asked a little more than a year ago to have a peer review conducted. I was at the district at that time. Have a peer review conducted on IT. And so the CTO for Montgomery County, Maryland, the CTO for Fairfax County, Virginia, and myself performed that peer review. If you can, if you look up there and just look at the colors, what we said at that time and what this says is that in terms of administrative systems, the human capital system, the financial management systems, and the procurement systems or the supply chain management system, we were in a red-yellow state, and that was after the first implementation of those systems by PeopleSoft. If I can have that move that $5.1 million, if you go to page 6, you will see what happens. Human capital systems, HR, payroll, recruitment, time and attendance, all of those systems get to where they need to be, and the procurement systems get to where they need to be. It still leaves us, we haven't done everything by a long shot, and I'm coming to your next, to your March meeting, to give you exactly that. Here was where we were a year ago. Here's where we are on that path now. Here's what we need to go forward. And you can see that everything on the left, everything that's pasteled in yellow and in violet are immediate administrative systems needs that there is no funding for either. And I've got them marked as a funding source for the next generation of CIP, of Capital Improvement Program. Those are all still at the end of the $5.1 million and the green. The $5.1 million gets you to the green on those things. And then there still are many, many needs that I would like to take you through.
Ms. Hewitt.
I had a motion. I don't think you heard me before, but anyway, my motion was to move approval subject to the consultation with the JCC and prior to the board meeting and positive feedback.
Second.
Well, there's a motion and a second, but this is so, in the discussion before I get to you, it's so technical. I think I agree with Mr. Zimmerman. You mentioned that you're going to come back in March. Can't this action wait until March?
I will lose the exact right team who is in mid-remediation. I don't. You got another place to give me $5.1 million so this team can continue. That's fine. This is where I know I can pause the handsets. I think we can do some more deals, maybe, of the kind, or get grants, or today I can't tell you exactly where I'll go and get that money back, but I'll be working every day to find places to get that money back and put the handsets in. But for right now, this, to me, and to you and to Metro, is much more important to complete this than to have the handsets today.
Okay, I can support this motion going forward, and I was going to make the second before Mr. Benjamin did, but you know, I certainly would like to know at our board meeting, where do you tend to get the money for the handsets? So some recommendation there. And also, you seem so convinced that this this remediation team is going to be able to do the job. I'd really like to have not as much detail as you're giving today, but some sort of summary of what happened before and why it wasn't implemented properly, and why do you think this team is going to be able to do it properly? I understand a lot of what you're saying, but maybe you almost provide too much information, Ms. Peck, which makes it more confusing. So, I mean, I wanted to offer that suggestion as well. But
Mr. Zimmerman?
You know, Ms. Peck's a very effective salesperson, and you know, but I mean, I've seen dazzling presentations by IT people lots of times, and my reservation is that some, you know, not that long ago, but sometime back when there were different people sitting in those seats, those of us sitting in these seats saw a presentation and were told, this is the things we need to do, and this is how we need to do it, and you know, give us all this money, and you know, trust us, it's going to be great. And now we have folks sitting in those chairs saying, yeah, what they were doing there, not so good. We're going to take their money out. They're going to do this, and you know, we're going to do it differently. And trust us, it'll be great. And you know, they may be absolutely right. You know, but the trouble is, I don't have a whole lot that I can base that on. And if it's so important, and if it's you know so urgent that it can't be slowed down, then I really want to know why then my IT people get to you know see this and review it and provide me with you know their comments that yeah, this is the right way to go, or I'm not sure about this. You know, if it's that is that important now, then a week or two ago they could have had that conversation. And if this had been through the JCC, that would all have occurred already.
I'm very delighted to go to the JCC. I would like to. I can answer now Mr. Giancola's question. Why, if another team couldn't do this, why can this team do it? The answer is because we have just done it. And we have just done it with these teams. District of Columbia, 9 years ago, and I think Mr. Monterey can attest to this, had literally no technology whatsoever. The team who is here at WMATA now, the team who is leading this remediation, is the exact team who successfully, the first time, put in PeopleSoft administration systems two blocks down the street.
Okay, we're going to vote on this, but before this comes to the board meeting, if it's approved by this committee, do properties want to talk to the IT in various jurisdiction departments and the
motion calls for
yes, it does.
For okay. Consultation.
All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Record, Mr. Zimmerman, the vote in opposition. The ayes have it, and the motion is passed. Any further discussion on that? We have an information item. What's the pleasure of the committee? Want to go through this? Or?
I wrote it.
What is it?
You heard it.
Come on.
Anybody else?
There are a couple of interesting issues in there.
I don't object to it. Okay. Well, let's
we can
just,
do a quick
just have a quick meeting. A quick discussion on the information item A, monthly financial report.
A little bit of good news. We're catching up on some backlog of work. We've got two monthly reports. I'll skip the November report and just touch on the December report halfway through the fiscal year. Bottom right-hand corner, it's hard to see on the screen, but basically we're in good shape in the operating budget, but not by a large margin. Revenues are, on a percentage basis, exactly on budget. Dollar-wise, they're $1.3 million under. Expenses are 1% better than budget halfway through the year, so there's a subsidy favorability of about $5.6 million halfway through the year. We've been staying on this kind of razor margin of good-bad all through the year, and we anticipate that to continue. On the next page, just taking a quick look at ridership, and I mentioned this briefly last month. December as a month was a bad month because we had a couple of snowstorms. The federal government was off one day we didn't expect to have happen. We've been looking at the January numbers. Ridership's popped back up. So I don't want to dwell on this too much, but we are seeing continued growth in both Metro Rail and Metro Bus. Last month at this time, there was a question about Metro Access ridership because these reports had been showing 4% and operations reports had been showing 16%. And the short story is this report was wrong. We found out just a plain old mistake. It was just a transposition error in moving numbers around from system to system. The reason I didn't pick it up earlier is because the cost of the service is also growing at 4%. And historically, we've always seen ridership and cost grow at about the same rate. So when I was thinking ridership was at 4%, because costs were at 4%, it kind of made sense to me. But it was just a mistake. We got behind the scenes, and we now see that ridership on Metro Access is back up in the teens, which is typically where it has been. So that mistake has been correct.
So you're saying that the number that's reported is an incorrect number?
The number from last month
for December
for last month for when we were here, July, August, October's financial report, the 4% was an error.
But what we have here is Metro Access ridership growth year to date is zero. Right?
Over budget. Year to year, it's 16%. Actual this year versus actual last year is up at 16%. Okay.
And the budget went up 16%?
Yes. And my mistake when I was reporting 4% was I thought it made sense because the costs are growing at 4%. And kind of interestingly, behind the scenes, if you've got ridership growing at 6% and costs growing at only 4%, there's an efficiency going on there. Mm-hmm. But bottom line, there was just a mistake in this number.
Any more questions?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, so we have Metro Bus ridership exactly at budget?
Yes.
But revenues are 4% below budget?
That's correct.
How can, and I believe budget had only a 1% increase in ridership?
Correct.
How can we be having that disparity that ridership is growing at budget, but we're still losing revenue?
To make a budget, it requires two numbers. It requires a ridership times what we think the customers will pay, called average fare. What we're concluding is that the budgeted average fare is probably a penny or two too high. So the ridership seems to be doing what we thought it would do. The amount of money that we thought we would be collecting from the passengers in actuality is a little bit less than what the budget assumed, to the tune of a penny or two a month. Each penny's worth about $500,000.
But we have a very long history of knowing what the average fare is, and there was no change in fare.
The average fare does vary by month in the rate of a couple of pennies. I just looked at it going back 3 or 4 years, and you can see the average fare ranging from like 67 to 73 cents. And we've seen some volatility in the first couple of months this year that I frankly didn't expect. And the actual average fare has been coming in a few cents below budget, and we did just this morning look at the January results, which I'll bring to you, and it's now bumped back up. It actually, the average fare jumped almost a nickel prior to the fare increase. It has nothing to do with the fare increase.
And, you know, that's great from those of us that do financial stuff, but something real is happening out there. Something is causing that to happen. What's going on?
At the rate of a penny or two, I'm not sure, because over a very long period, I'll put it in the next report for you.
That's why I'm looking at the six-month number. The six-month number averages all of that out, and we still have a 3% disparity.
Yeah, very quickly, we went back about 5 years on the average fare, and you're right. At that level of view, there's almost a perfect correlation between budgeted average fare and actual average fare. As I zoom in to the most recent time period, there's more variability than I would have expected. And what I'm seeing in the January numbers, which you don't have in front of you, is it's reversed itself now. And instead of having the actual below budget, the actual now has jumped up above budget. And looking at averages over a long period of time,
the rate at which the collections are actually accrued in the
could
system.
Be, and that's why I'm saying at any one month.
But that's why I keep looking at the six-month number, and the six-month number takes that out. And the reason I'm pursuing this is all of this relates to the fare increase we just did,
mm-hmm.
and how we allocate the funds for this year versus next year.
Absolutely, and in future
this
reports,
this is a very critical factor, particularly to those of us that have less bus service than, say, the district.
Yeah, actually, Janice, if you could just, for the sake of display, jump back to that average fare table that is in this report, because I do want to keep track of this for you as we move through the course of the year. And this will be the last month where we have data prior to the fare increase. And what I'm talking about is going on right in here. This is revenue. This is ridership. This is average fare. So Mr. Benjamin's correct that Metro bus revenue is coming in about $2.2 million under budget right now. But ridership is exactly on budget. So what's happening is, from a collection standpoint, we're getting slightly more money, or slightly less money per rider than the budget assumed. We assumed we'd collect about 71 cents per trip, and we're getting about 68%. From a budgeting standpoint, we saw 70 last year. We kind of bumped it up maybe a penny, and that's in the realm of normal variability. What I wasn't expecting was to see the actual fare paid decline.
And the question is, why?
And I think at this moment the answer is, if you let it run another couple of months, it will neutralize itself. I'm only seeing this variability.
Bar chart up here?
I'm sorry?
Show us our bar chart, the green and red bar chart.
Back up two, three pages, one more, right there.
Right-hand side.
This is what's been going on this year. And what could have happened, and we've got to watch this, is we might have bumped the average fare up a penny or too much in the budget calculation. Because you can see in prior years, it didn't happen. As a matter of fact, we probably under-budgeted the average fare in previous years. But I've already seen the January results, which are not on this chart, and you're going to see a green bar here next month.
Which says that you didn't do it wrong.
You did it right. Something else is going on.
Something else could be going
on. Let's not have the discussion continue, but let me just note that what we're getting is a trend that's one that we haven't seen before.
Absolutely.
It's a very significant trend. It's one where you can see what happened over previous years, and all of a sudden this year something else is happening. That affects a lot of the decisions on revenue allocation, and it affects subsidy. And so we
absolutely
need to know why.
Any further discussion? No further discussion.